What do Giles doing the limbo and the prices on Amazon.com have in common? Both keep asking, how low can you go? Get the best deals on everything, including back to school, and help support Rob Has a Podcast when you start your shopping with our link at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from Rue Manor, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who says chloroform, more like boriform, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to our very special Whodunit Podcast. And I'm joined by the man who knows... I don't know if he knows whodunit, but he knows everything about whodunit. Here he is, the one and only Kurt Clark.
Hey there, Rob.
Yeah, and I hope that people did not take away that I think whodunit is boring. That's just what you're supposed to say after somebody uses chlorophyll or chloroform.
Yeah, he chloroformed a couple times.
Yeah, a double feature of chloroform this week in the Rue Manor.
Yes, indeedy.
Yeah, well, Kurt, we have a great show here tonight to talk about a very fun episode of Whodunit. My Twitter was blowing up after this episode, blowing up especially with people who have got to put two and two together that I'm doing a Big Brother podcast at the time that they're watching Whodunit. So I definitely am not watching the episode, and when you tweet the person who got killed and me, you are spoiling the show for me, people. That being said, it was still a very fun episode.
It was. It was good. It was actually, and we'll probably get to this, I've kind of been able to track along with the clues. I mean, again, we're in that unique position as the viewing audience to get to see all of the clues at each of the investigation points that all of the players get to see. We were in that position for this one, too. And I'd say for the first time, I was kind of getting a little bit lost at what was going on. And I was actually... looking forward to understanding exactly what happened. I thought it was kind of a really interesting mystery this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very complicated murder and a very complicated episode. One that we're very sad to see Gino Walker be the latest victim of the whodunit killer. Only one person gets killed this week, but Kurt, I have some good news.
What's that?
Not only is Gino not dead.
Wait. How is that not the end of the sentence? Like, that's a surprise. I mean, that in itself is a surprise. He's not dead, you're saying.
Yes, Gino is not only not dead, but we will be talking with him in about 20 minutes.
Oh, wow. Well, let's get this show on the road then.
And not via a Ouija board or with the help of some sort of spiritualist, some medium, the Long Island psychic, or anything like that. We are going to talk to Gino on the phone in just a little bit.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And kudos to Laura Holzwasser for helping to get make that happen today. Good job with that. And we'll talk to Gino in just a little bit. But we've got a lot to get to before we get to that point here on a Whodunit podcast. And really, Kurt, this was such a crazy episode. It was like Giles, we talked about last week how he was so miserable with being out in the wilderness, out in the saddle, in the stables, I should say. And he was so happy to be back at Rue Manor this week. He was giddy.
He was giddy. He was dancing with Sophie the maid. He was creeping everybody out. This is the Giles we like to see.
He was, yeah, creeping people out. He was dancing. He got laid. Is Giles...
Oh, yeah.
People are wondering, is Giles drinking on the job?
He seemed to be a little bit under the influence at the very end. I mean, he lost the jacket. He did the limbo. We've saw a side of Giles today that I did not think existed.
Yeah, Giles was really out of control, especially at the party. All right, but we're getting ahead of ourselves at the luau. I guess let's talk about this murder. And Kurt, I agree with you. I think this was the most complicated murder to date. They said the killer is undoubtedly escalating his or her game.
Right, and it was I think we thought that they were maybe dipped in wax or something coming out of the last one, probably a little bit because of, I thought, how they looked, but also the preview seemed to pay that off a little bit, but not so much. And then a mess of tracks and footprints and blood drops upstairs. I'm like, I didn't know what was going on, to be, tell you the truth, until all was revealed.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't blame Gino or Ronnie for not knowing what went on, because this was a very complicated murder. So we had the two people. It was Dana and Sasha were the two people to go down this week. And Gino, of course, finds them. But the odd thing to me throughout this, Kurt, is so Giles comes downstairs and then he starts dancing. Doing like a waltz there for in front of everybody. Did he hate Dana and Sasha?
I think he just got caught up in the moment. I don't know exactly what song it was that was playing, but obviously he said it took him back. He said that he was a bit of a lady killer back in the day.
Yeah, what was up with that?
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, it's just a turn of phrase.
I was a bit of a lady killer back in the day.
What's up with that, Giles?
I think you know, he, like I said, just got swept up in the moment. Some very sentimental, soul wrenching organ music playing. He just couldn't help himself.
Well, Giles better watch his organ, because it was getting not in limbo this week, if you know what I mean.
Well played.
All right, so. This murder was very odd, because at what point it seems like they missed the point where the killer walked through a giant rubber stamp ink thing. Why was there so much like black paint and shoe polish on the carpet, on the wheelbarrow? I mean, this seems like the killer really was. Did the killer spill a barrel of ink in the hallway somewhere?
You know what? I didn't even think about that until Kristen Marie on Twitter, I think, posed that question to us last night. And I was like, you know what? That's a really good point. There's like, was there a thick layer of black paint in the backup morgue downstairs? Or, I mean, it looks suspiciously like the same thing that Adriana had stepped in right before she tried kicking herself out of the breakfast nook prior to the exploding golf cart incident. It was like that same very deliberate tracking paint. And that's the one thing, I have no idea where that's coming from.
Well, how about this theory? You know, maybe Rue Manor is filthy, and maybe Giles could take a break from the dancing and the wordplay and all of the fooling around and can clean the damn house like the butler he's supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, the bloodstains, upstairs is looks like it's pretty much a mess. I mean, it's going to not get definitely an A rating from the restaurant review board anyway anytime soon.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Kurt. I was too busy to clean the house for you.
sorry. I would love to have Giles on the podcast.
That would be great.
He's up there right now in the bucket list of top three Rob has a podcast guests, I think.
Is Amanda the receptionist from The Apprentice?
No, she's way
there?
Down. She would be boring to talk to. Giles would be. We have a lot to ask Giles.
Yeah. I think we've decided that the @GilesTheButler on Twitter is probably not an official Giles feed.
It's not canon.
The actor who plays Giles is on Twitter, so we could potentially make that happen.
And Kurt, don't ruin it for me and tell me that Giles is an actor. I want to believe that Giles is a real person.
I'm sorry. When I said the actor that played Giles, I meant
Yeah. So we had the investigation of Sasha's last known whereabouts, and then also of Dana's last known whereabouts, and then
similar, the two.
Yes. Anything from the investigation strike you as being particularly interesting?
The one thing that was interesting for me was, and again, I had to go back and watch it a couple times, was the talk about the footprints and how Sasha's room. There were female footprints outside of both rooms, One set of, I guess it turns out it was one set of footprints, but there weren't female footprints in Sasha's room, but there were female footprints in Dana's room. I was just trying to kind of keep all of that straight. And then something that, I can't remember if it was Chris or Melina that pointed it out. I think it was Chris. She was the one that noticed that it was actually a three-wheeled implement, whereas I don't believe that Gino and Lindsay kind of noticed that, or at least called it out to our attention when they were discussing Sasha's room. But when Chris and Melina were investigating Dana's room, it was one of them that recognized the fact that this is some sort of three-wheeled device. And that was something that I hadn't even noticed. And so I thought that was actually a good pickup by, I believe it was Chris on that team.
Did you think that the killer got a little lazy this week? Why chloroform Sasha, put her in the wheelbarrow, and then make Dana hoof it on? I mean, why not chloroform Dana also and put them both in the wheelbarrow?
I'd like to think it's just to make the how done it more difficult.
Yeah.
If there was no blood dripping on the out, on the floor outside and no one set of footprints, it would have maybe a little easier to solve. But I wasn't clear. Did they say that Dana woke up and wasn't able to be chloroformed? It didn't really give that impression. It's like he made the conscious decision to have Dana push the cart with the knife on her back, correct?
Yeah, it just seemed very... I found it to be very disturbing that the killer would do this.
Yeah, and we got to see some great acting from Dana and Sasha in the flashback sequence.
Yeah,
so.
It's very dramatic. But if we're just trying to throw everybody off the scent, why doesn't the killer, after he kills them, why doesn't he shoot them then?
No, that's a really good point. And it reminds me again of some of the, we may talk about this a little bit more in a later week, some of the murder mystery parties that I've done, some of the prepackaged kits, they'll do something where it's, it kind of opens up and it tells you the crime scene is like there's window glass broken in and then there's like a knife stuck in the wall and it looks like there was an explosion in the corner. So you kind of come into the scene and there's a whole bunch of chaos and you have no idea what went on. And over the course of the investigation, things become clear. It seems like up to this point, the killer has been kind of doing that in terms of having a bunch of things there, but it's like, what's the thing that really matters the most? But I thought this was a little bit overdramatic, having Dana push Sasha's body out and down the hall.
It seems like the killer was just lazy. Didn't want to push the cart with both the bodies in it.
And do we have to interpret that as a clue? Who is the laziest contestant left?
I don't know where you're going with this, Kurt. Yeah. Watch it. So, yeah, I felt like the killer was lazy, and, it's kind of like when they, are going to whack you, and they, bring you out in the middle of the desert, and they give you the shovel, and it's, okay, you dig the hole. That's sort of what this was like for me.
Yeah, no, that definitely resonates.
Yes. Kurt, now, everybody has appreciated your insight on the Whodunit podcast all season long. Are you available to come and host murder mystery parties at people's houses?
Oh, sure. Why not? It's been a couple years, but it's something that we could potentially link to down the road on Amazon. But there's plenty of great kits out there, and we can maybe talk about that at the finale. Like, if people want to kind of really got into murder mysteries and the idea of mysteries from watching Whodunit. Once the season's over, there's lots of ways out there that people can kind of keep this interest sparked.
All right. Will we also be able to hire Giles to come?
Do our best.
Okay.
Although it might get messy at that point, because apparently wherever he goes, death does follow.
All right. Let's talk about some of the strategery from this episode of Whodunit, because there was a lot of interesting things that were going on. So, we have this decision, basically, that rolls over from last week, where Cam wants to freeze out Gino. We have the great Cam and Gino rivalry, and Ronnie is going to come over and join Cam, although Gino doesn't exactly know about this. Mm-hmm. So basically, Cam has his idea for what he wants to see going on, and then Ronnie has his idea of what he wants to see going on. And it's just a very interesting discussion that you could apply to Whodunit, Survivor, Big Brother. It's like, hey, I want you to come over and work with our side. And the other person says, well, okay, I'll work with you, but I don't want to tell the other people that I'm secretly working with you. And we've seen this come up on a number of different shows, and sometimes the person who's the flipper ends up in a very good position, and other times they get sort of blown out of the water. And I wanted to know, who did you think was right in this? Did Cam have the right thing? Should he have totally had Ronnie blow up his spot in front of Gino? Or was Ronnie right that this was the better course of action?
I personally think that Ronnie's course of action was the better course of action. I mean, there's no need to completely ice someone out. And I think this is like the second or third time we've heard that phrase, ice out somebody.
Yeah. Because the killer turned down the air conditioning, and it's more wordplay.
Exactly. And there's even that one point where I thought, well, were they actually frozen while they were standing in place? But you know, that's neither here nor there. But I think Ronnie's approach is better because, again, I believe it was at that point where if Gino had won the riddle and everybody had completely been icing him out, he wouldn't have been able to he wouldn't have been willing or open to share what he had learned with anybody on the team. He would have kept it for himself. So I think Ronnie's approach was better. But it seems at some point the communication between Cam and Ronnie broke down in terms of what they actually agreed to do in regards to Gino. We saw that Ronnie's like, no, I just didn't tell him the full story. Whereas Cam had completely expected, no, you're going to shut down all communication with him. And I don't think that that was a decision by Cam after the fact to kind of amend how they had agreed upon things. Because even we saw after the investigation, Cam was at a table outside with Chris and Lindsay saying, yeah, no, Ronnie agreed. He's not going to tell them anything. So I truly believe in Cam's mindset. He didn't think Ronnie, he thought the agreement with Ronnie was to not tell Gino anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see both sides of this. I mean, if I was in Ronnie's situation, you know, if I was walking in Ronnie's shoes and get out the tissue paper so I could do that, I would definitely want to play it the same way Ronnie did. I mean, Ronnie played it what was the best for Ronnie. But at the same time, if I'm Cam, I definitely feel the way that Cam felt. It was like a situation where both people were looking out for what was in their own best interests. And right. It was a very just interesting strategic moment in this show.
Let's say where Cam was potentially short-sighted was if Gino had won the riddle portion of the investigation. Mm-hmm. If he had a tight kind of agreement with Ronnie, then at least Gino would have been willing to tell Ronnie some information at that point, and Ronnie might have been willing to tell Cam. So there could have been a chain of custody of information going on there at that point. Whereas because Cam was like, no, you got to ice him out, that was completely blocking any information from even possibly getting to Cam.
Yeah, and I think that Ronnie was the one that made the poor strategic decision. I just didn't understand why Ronnie felt like he was better off to be with Cam and Chris and Lindsay rather than just to keep moving forward with Melina and Gino this week.
That's a good point. We haven't even talked about that. In terms of how to approach shutting out Gino, that's one thing. But you're right. The larger question is, do you even agree to jump ship? He could have basically taken Gino and Melina and gone to Chris and Lindsay with the exact same plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it seems like Chris and Cam seem pretty tight. And I'd say that might be looking at everybody left in the game. That might be the tightest pair in terms of trust. Lindsay's not really, doesn't have a lot of trust there. Melina, I think, wants to trust Ronnie, but isn't sure. I think he won some points with her this week. I was kind of interested to see the whole sequence where Ronnie was sketching out what he saw in the morgue and then handing it in that piece of paper, trying to get it to Melina. So I thought that was an interesting kind of approach from Ronnie's perspective. But I'd say that the tightest pairing right now, it'd probably be Chris and Cam.
I just thought that Ronnie and Gino had a good thing going on there, too, for a while. And it almost like a Russell Hance in Survivor Samoa. Somehow, Cam, with his little group of three people and sometimes four with Lindsay, has basically, you know, almost decimated this whole. Remember when they had this whole big alliance of, like, they had, like, seven or eight people on the one side?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like It was like six or seven people against Don Chris and Cam and Lindsay.
Yeah, Don and Adriana and Dana and Sasha and all these people. And they've totally, that whole alliance has just gone down one after another, like dominoes.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's surprising that it's happened. But I think, again, it all comes down to that riddle. Mm-hmm. And like that riddle is kind of that keystone that locks everything together.
And so the only way that I think that this made sense for Ronnie to do what he did was, did you think that Ronnie felt like Gino was the killer?
Well, in that case, then...
Because doesn't Ronnie think Cam is the killer?
I don't think this last week we saw Ronnie make... I could be wrong, and again, the Twitterverse will let me know if I'm wrong. But I don't think that this week we saw Ronnie actually make an accusation as to who the killer was. I think he was one of the few people who we didn't see an accusation made for. But again, I could be wrong. But I think like, if you thought that Gino... But you said Ronnie thinks... If Ronnie thought that Gino was the killer...
Mm-hmm. Then I feel like it makes sense to work with Cam, because then you would not have... Although then Gino couldn't get eliminated. Yeah.
Exactly. Then he would be... Then at the very least, you'd be... You know, almost best case scenario is that Gino and Chris and Lindsay are telling you and Melina 80% of the story or 60% of the story. And then you, in turn, are telling Gino 40% of the story. But if he's not going to get eliminated anyway, then it's you and Melina that are kind of on the chopping block, so to speak.
Yeah, and why I think this was an especially bad decision for Ronnie, who I think has played a very good game up until this point, is that, okay, now Gino is gone. What's going to happen on the next episode? Now we're down to five. And guess what? Cam is still going to have Chris and Lindsay. And unless Ronnie and Melina can get Lindsay to flip back over to them, and we know that Lindsay has worked with them in the past. She has a working history with them. You know, they could ice out Ronnie next week.
They very well could. And yeah, we've seen again, I think even this episode, we saw at one point Lindsay talking about contemplating who she likes working with. We've definitely seen it over the last couple episodes, and I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up flipping. And you know, Lindsay seems to be at the center of some conversations, according to the previews for next week. I won't say any more than that for people who won't watch the previews, but next week could be interesting, especially in regards to Lindsay.
And I have a new pick. I've updated my pick for the killer, and I feel I'm not going to change it again. I'm confident again. I'm going to ride this one to the end.
And who is that?
Melina.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because I was, after Dana got bumped off at the end of the prior episode, I switched my vote to Melina. I'm actually considering switching my vote from Melina.
Oh.
I'm actually looking at Lindsay.
Lindsay. Really?
And part of it's a little, yeah, and part of it's being a little bit of a meta viewer, so to speak. But I definitely don't think it's Cam. I don't think it's Chris. I think it's somebody who's been very much neutral or a floater. Ronnie's been kind of in that position. Lindsay's been in that position. The two people who have least been in that position have been Cam and Chris. And I would even say, you know, prior to his elimination, Gino. But I'm looking at it from the perspective of the person who is the killer does not have to worry about being eliminated. The mm-hmm. person who is the killer doesn't know how the murders occur, and that they can participate in the investigation alongside the actual players, but they really don't have necessarily motivation to try to completely solve the investigation. They have some freedom to mess with the others and create chaos. And so I'm thinking that because the person who is the killer has a little bit more of a free rein, it's a bit unfair of them from a game perspective or from a production perspective to really try to target key specific people that they just happen to not like. That would be like the production team trying to get someone specific out. So the intensity with which Cam and Ronnie...
It's not Cam. It's not any of the guys. It's not Cam. It's not Ronnie.
Yeah, and not for some of the reasons that I think that we had cited in the past necessarily in terms of kind of a kind of a large-statured male being the threatening killer, but really from the perspective of, it seems like the killer who doesn't have to worry about being eliminated, specifically trying to get other specific players eliminated, runs a little bit against probably what production want to do. So you're probably looking at the killer as being somebody who hasn't necessarily been focusing on getting other individuals out. And so for that reason, I don't think it's Cam. I don't think it's Ronnie. I didn't think it was Gino. And so again, that eliminates all of the women.
No.
One person who That eliminates all of the men. Lindsay really hasn't been on our radar in terms of discussions, and also hasn't been that active compared to the other people in the game in social media. So again, a little bit of a meta clue. I don't know if she's being, would potentially as a killer be threatened to, or not threatened to, but requested by production to necessarily not engage as much.
I don't know. I'm going to stick with Melina. And a big clue for me this week was a couple things. Melina is always the one who's screaming the most. She's always shrieking. I mean, why is she really that scared? And then Chris said to her at one point in this episode that, don't you think it's weird that Gino doesn't seem upset? And she was like, yeah, that is weird. And it's like, why would Gino be upset? People aren't really dying. Like, why would she buy into that?
That's a good point. I mean, again, up until now, Melina had been, post Dana, Melina was my pick, but I'm shifting my sights onto Lindsay only because she's really one of the few people we haven't talked about, which makes me think she's just kind of coasting a bit, planting seeds of doubt, and just kind of letting the other characters step forth a little bit.
Okay. So let's go ahead and at this point, I think this is a good spot to bring in Gino. So let's dial up Gino on the hotline here. Hopefully he's made a full recovery from being dead. We hope so.
It's the killer, Gino. Surprise.
Hello.
Hello, is this Gino?
It is.
Gino, how's it going? This is Rob Cesternino, and you're on Rob Has a Podcast with my whodunit co-host, Kurt Clark.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Kurt. Hey, everybody listening.
Gino, we're so happy to hear that you are not dead.
Not in real life. No, I'm not in real life.
Thank goodness. All right. Well, Gino, you're the first person that we've ever talked to in real life from Whodunit. So that is going to be the answer to a Rob as a Podcast trivia question one day. And maybe you could answer all that right at bar trivia.
Perhaps I could. There is a store of worthless information in there, and that is now filed away.
Yeah. Well, we have so many questions to ask you. All that we ask is that we're all big fans of the show. Please don't reveal anything that will help us identify who the whodunit killer is. And what's up with this whodunit killer? I felt like they were trying to frame you this week.
Yeah, I definitely, from top to bottom, it seemed as though the whodunit killer had it out for me. Everybody else saw me standing over the dead bodies. They had size 13 feet. I had size 13 feet. The whodunit killer definitely had it in for me this week.
Yeah. All right. So many different things to get to. I guess let's start with this big storyline, I feel like, of this season of Whodunit has been this rivalry, where it started back in like the second or third episode where Cam...
Rivalry? I have no idea what you're talking about. What rivalry?
Cam took his group with Ulysses and Chris, and then Lindsay was back and forth, and they said, "Hey, we're going to start an alliance." And then from that point on, it was like the two sides could never get back together, and it basically was like, "We're going to take out Cam." Cam said, "I'm going to take out Gino and Ronnie," and we had this whole big war going on in the house. I mean, how real was that? I mean, I know it's a show where it's like, you know, what's real, what's not real, but how much animosity was there really between the two sides?
Oh, it was real. There was definitely palpable tension. There wasn't when the cameras cut off, it wasn't we all became buddy-buddy. Like, people actually had feelings and did not genuinely like one another.
Really? Were you? Yeah. How surprised were you to see that Ronnie went and decided to basically switch over and go with Cam's side after last week?
You mean at the ranch?
After the events from the ranch in this episode, see it play out, how big of a shock to you was it to see Ronnie go over and start working with Cam when you guys had been so close throughout the game?
Well, in real time, and when we were in the mansion and as it was happening, I had absolutely no idea that's exactly what was going on. I knew that there was something dastardly, but I didn't know the extent of it. So I found out exactly how deep the treachery went at the same time that everybody else was, and I was completely shocked.
Yeah. I mean, Ronnie's like passing notes. He made like such a detailed map of everything on the body. I mean, could you believe to what extent he was passing notes around?
That absolutely, that boggled my mind. Like it was sort of hilarious to see on television, because I had no idea. He's standing over me, making eyes at Melina, and then he passes her this note behind my back. I had no idea any of that was happening.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of wild to see that to what lengths they would go to freeze you out of anybody. I mean, why did you feel like Ronnie went ahead and did that?
I honestly, the only thing I can come up with is he felt he knew eventually he was going to come down to, you know, he was going to have to match up with me, and he felt like that wasn't something he was adequate at doing, so he figured this was an opportunity to get rid of me. That's the best I can come up with.
Well,
Gino, this is Kurt. I got a quick question for you. In this last episode, I think everybody was racing to find kind of the secret hidden morgue behind the real morgue. About how close did you feel you were behind identifying that, beating Chris to the punch for this week?
I was there. I literally walked into the morgue with Chris and then realized I left my scalpel. And by the time I went back to get it, she had cut through to the secret room.
And what,
so I was literally right behind her.
Oh, wow. And what do you know what might your plan have, if you had won that round, that puzzle round, what would your plan have been for sharing the information? Would you have shared it with Ronnie and Melina? Would you have kept it all to yourself? Did you have a plan going into that for if you won the puzzle round?
I absolutely had a plan, and I think quite a diabolical one. My plan was actually I was giving that information to no one. At that point, I was going to declare because in my opinion, I've now saved myself for the day. I've made it through to the final five, and I was just going to let the four of them sort of fight it out amongst each other. But I had no intention of sharing that information back to Ronnie or Melina or anyone else.
Interesting, interesting.
How creepy was it to see your doppelganger there in the room and then have to start cutting your doppelganger open to with the scalpel?
It was initially creepy in the moment we walked in and you see it, but that's a game moment. And, you know, I don't have time to process any other feeling. It's just like, okay, give me the information I need. I need to solve this riddle. So, you know, at the end, I got buddy-buddy with my doppelganger. He's my best friend in the house.
You were hugging the doppelganger. That was the only person that didn't want to ice you out.
Exactly. That was the only person I could trust at that point. So I gave him a hug.
Yeah.
How much of the I don't want to say the stress or the focus, I mean, you've kind of got those investigation rounds where you're looking at the three different locations, and you know that the puzzle round is coming. Is like 80% of your focus on the puzzle round, like as you're doing the investigation, saying, okay, I'm looking for stuff, but I'm already thinking ahead to the puzzle round because that's where I know that the game can be made or broken. Like, how are you kind of like dividing your attention from round to round in terms of the different investigations you know you're going to have to do?
For me, I just tried to focus on whatever the task was at hand. Like, tried not to look ahead too much and tried not to look behind. Like, I just really wanted to focus as much as I could, whether I was investigating the last known whereabouts or whether I was running around the house trying to solve the riddle. I just was solely in that moment.
Gotcha.
Now, you felt like you had a couple of markers that you wanted to call in with Cam, and ultimately he did not feel the same way that you did about this. Right. Did you think that there was any chance that Cam was going to give you information from a couple of weeks ago when you were trying to freeze? Who is it that you were trying to freeze out from Cam's side? Was it Chris or Lindsay?
It was Ulysses and Lindsay.
Okay, got it.
That was ultimately my plan. I knew at that point that Cam was going to give me nothing. If I were dying of thirst in the desert, Cam wouldn't give me water.
Yes.
I knew he wouldn't do anything. But I thought Chris, however, would, in the sense of reciprocity, the fact that I had extended an olive branch to her, I thought that she would reply in kind. But, not everybody feels the same way about paying back debts, I guess.
Well, going back to the first day in the first episode, the original alliance was Cam and Ulysses and you. Did this
yep.
all start because you wanted to go your own way and you left the Cam alliance?
No, I actually got thrown out of the Cam alliance, actually.
Oh, no.
Cam was convinced that I had lied to him in that first investigation. And because of that, he and Ulysses withheld the information from the morgue about the round that was found in the back of Sherry's head. So they withheld that information from me and pushed me out of their group.
Yeah. I was so many questions about I want to ask you about how you got involved with whodunit in the first one. Kurt, do you have any more questions about the actual murder from this week?
I guess it's like one general question is obviously everybody in an attempt to make it to the next round is withholding some elements of information or lying about things, and there is this kind of subplot about technically one of us is the killer, and we know from interviews with the creators of the show that the focus is really on the method of the murder and the how done it
yeah.
the most. And was there a lot of? Go ahead.
I was just gonna. Sorry to cut you off there. I was definitely gonna say I think the show, as people watch it, should definitely be focusing on the how done it far more than the who done it, because from week to week, while we have our theories about who done it, and we obviously state it at the end of our case every week, it really, the thing that gets you moving forward is solving the puzzle and being able to put together the pieces of information of the how. The who is really secondary.
Right. And I was wondering to what extent during the play of the game, because of the heavy emphasis on the how, did the who really even truly enter your mind from week to week, or was it really, to your point, if it was a secondary at most, and you were just so focused on nailing down how the murders were committed.
Yeah, knowing who it was wasn't going to keep me in the house, so I was really focusing on the how, as I think everybody was. But it definitely played a part when it came time to exchange information. You sort of have to think about whether or not can I trust this person? Is this person the killer? Or and so forth and so on.
Right. Cool.
Gina, you know how I knew you were done for this week? Once Giles starts talking about, I have good news, we're going to have a luau. And then you
right.
start saying, oh man, luau, that sounds great. I can't wait. That's exactly what I need right now. I know whoever is excited about whatever cockamamie idea Giles has, I know that's who's about to get murdered.
I can go cook my steak. I can go cook the steak myself in the kitchen. Great.
Yeah. Giles is like, all right, we're going bowling. And whoever's like, oh man, I bowled the perfect game once. This will be great. I know that's the person who's going to end up in the ball return.
that would be a hell of a way to go. But what's actually funny, just to pull back the curtain for you a little bit. So there comes a moment after the dinner, after the scared cards and spare cards have been given, when we are, those of us that have meet our demise, are told, like, all right, this is your your time, and there's a part that you have to play. For instance, Don knew that he was going to have to go into the kitchen, and this is something that no one would ever know, but Don is actually a vegetarian. So there's no way Don would have ever actually got up to go and cook the steak. But it makes for good television.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that, because you did seem, we knew about that from an interview with one of the creators, that there was a small acting part that Don had, and obviously Ulysses must have had a small acting part when everybody rode off on the horses. And I was also wondering then, since going down to the luau, if I assume that you kind of knew what your fate was at that point, and you were just kind of playing it out to the end.
I did. Coming down the stairs for the luau, I did know. Although at the table, when Giles announced that we were getting laid, I was genuinely excited. I didn't even realize at that point.
Why would you be?
We've been in the house for a long time.
Giles is really turning into such a great TV character over the course of the season. Like, he was pretty straight-laced through most of the season, but he's really starting to come into his own. Last week, he seemed very cranky, I thought, when he had to go and be outside and eat a bag lunch. This week, between he's dancing, he's talking about he's going to get laid, he's doing the limbo. I mean, is Giles coming out of his shell now?
I definitely think so. I mean, I think he's hitting his stride. I will tell you, the moment when my bromance with Giles began was when he came running through the dining room with the rifle.
Yes.
And I honestly, that was not a fact. When I picked up that chair, we had a connection, and I really gave Giles the nod and said, like, okay, we're going in here. We're going to get this cat. I've got your back, Giles. That was not an act in any way, shape, or form. I would have followed Giles into oblivion at that point.
Yeah,
Giles, you've got point. I'm behind you.
Yeah, we noticed all throughout the season too. Whenever they found the body, you were always the person who was like, "All right, everybody, stand back, don't touch anything, get back, everybody." Are you just looking out for everybody all the time?
Yeah, I guess that's just sort of my natural tendency. Like again, like there was the same with the mountain lion. Folks wanted to get up and go running in there. That's just not a good idea. Like, we just heard some sort of wild animal roar. Why would you run into that room? Like, just take a moment and proceed cautiously. I guess that's just my general approach to life.
Now, how did you end up getting on Whodunit? Where did you hear about that there was going to be a show called Whodunit, and what interested you about it to end up being on this show?
Well, it's actually, I applied to be on another show a little over a year ago.
Glass House?
That show, no, not Glass House, but it is actually the same people that were casting Glass House. I wasn't going for Glass House, but they were casting for a show called Ford Escapes, which is basically The Amazing Race, but in the United States, and you're driving around in a Ford Escape, you and a partner. And so I applied for that show. Obviously did not get on it, but the casting director that I was working with said, you know, we think you're really great. We'll keep you in mind if anything comes up in the future. I'm thinking, okay, sure. He tells everybody that was I almost got on a reality television show story. I can be able to tell my grandkids one day. And lo and behold, a full year goes by. I get a tweet out of nowhere from this casting director saying, you know, he thinks he's got something for me. I give him a call. He explains to me the premise of Whodunit. It's a real-life Clue meets CSI. Would I be interested? And I said, absolutely. I'm guaranteed to win this. You guys might as well just write me the check right now.
Mm-hmm.
And after a few interviews, I met with some TV executives, and they put me on TV.
Boom. There you go. And when you show up for this show, and, you know, God knows what they must have told you ahead of time and what you might have expected, did you have any idea that that there was somebody among you who was going to be murdered on the first show, Sherry?
No clue. I think that caught everybody off guard how quickly it started. We had absolutely no idea. We barely understood how the gameplay was going to work.
Yeah.
And suddenly we're doing investigations. And one of the things which we found out and you just realize very instantly is, as we're doing the investigation, I think initially you'll notice, if you go back and look, that we tried to be very careful. You see people like using pins like they've seen on television to move things around so they don't leave fingerprints. But within a couple minutes, you realize, like, wait a minute, this is just a reality show. Nobody's coming to dust for prints. So you just start picking things up and tearing them apart, and you know, that's when the fun started.
We see in the previews next week, it looks like, I don't know if it was like Melina and Chris are just kind of giving your body the heave-ho in the morgue.
Yeah, when you go to the morgue.
They work you over the morgue.
Yeah, and like, how weird is that? That this person is sitting there, and you're acting like they're a dead person, and like manhandling them and flipping them over.
It's incredibly weird, just pretending to be your dead body, and they're obviously having a conversation, standing directly over you. You're laying there pretending like you're dead. At some point, they begin to raise your arms and legs, and they attempted to roll me over at one point, and it was apparent like there was no way. They're not particularly yeah. large or strong people.
Like a little help, strong, Gino. A little help here, buddy.
So I had to exactly. I had to give them a little roll over.
Yeah, I think I would be in the morgue, and I would be like talking about them as if they were dead. Like, that Don, he was a real a-hole. He was a real son of a bitch. Good to see him go.
one of the nice things is once you do pass into the afterlife, we got a little bit more freedom from the production side and storytelling side. So after they did their investigation, I did get to say goodbyes to them in the morgue, and we hugged. And so, just a reminder that, we're not really dead.
Okay.
Some closure.
Some closure before you can move on to the afterlife. Now, did you guys actually sleep in Rue Manor?
We did. We did, in fact, sleep in Rue Manor.
Yeah. Okay. And, like, are you guys really, like, locked in there for the night? Or, like, are you guys, do they just say, like, at a certain time, okay, production's over and you could sort of, like, hang out with the other people from the show?
No, we were pretty much, if we were not on camera, we were pretty much sequestered. Every now and then, I guess they could tell that we were starting to get getting a little stir crazy. They would give us a little bit of yard time. But for the most part, production went in for the day. We'd go to our rooms. Hopefully we had a magazine or something along those lines. But there was no internet. There's no laptop, no cell phone. So we pretty much were just left to our own devices.
What about Rock of Love DVDs?
Say again?
What about Rock of Love DVDs? They didn't hand those out?
Yes, everyone was issued a Rock of Love DVD as we entered the rent. No, generally not. Adriana, I'm not sure exactly where she got her hands on one of those.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't get one because it led to her getting blown up.
And how long?
Blown up real good.
How long was the taping of the season? Like how many days is each case take?
So each episode actually took us 3 days to create.
Oh, wow.
So generally, the first day would be the investigation. The second day would be the riddle and dinner. And then the third day, we would do our confessional interviews.
Okay. That makes sense. Any other questions about the production, Kurt?
No, I'm good.
I feel like I had something else that I wanted to know, and I can't remember what it was. And I'm sure I'll think of it after we get you off.
The moment we hang up, think of it.
The moment we hang up, I feel like I can't. I'm somebody that can't solve the case. I don't know what you could tell us about the quiz or anything. I mean, how many questions do they ask you on this quiz?
It would vary. There'd usually be around 12 to 15 questions. It would be sort of the pertinent information from each of the sites, and it'd be balanced pretty equally so that each site contained some information. And then there would be questions that, of course, the only way you would know is if you had information from solving the riddle.
And is it multiple choice or a short answer?
Short answer. No multiple choice. That would be way too easy.
Okay, that's what I was wondering too tonight, that he's like, well, I would never have thought that it was this, but now that it's one of the choices, that makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And in the event of a tie, it then goes to time. So we were all timed as we took our tests. We took them individually in a room with someone videotaping us and standing over us. And so in the case that, you know, you scored the same as someone else, then it became the case of who took the test faster.
Yeah.
Very similar to the mole, I think.
Had you ever seen the mole before?
Oh, yeah. Big fan of the mole.
Yeah. No, it's somewhat similar in the format of the show. And, you know, I think a lot of us are looking for a mole in the same way that, like, how we're trying to find the killer. But it's not exactly the same.
No, not exactly the same. I mean, we couldn't do a carbon copy. It's a brand new genre, a brand new style of television we're bringing to you. So we can't just copy off the mole and call it who does.
That's right. That's right. So, Gino, was there ever a chance of a whodunit mance for you at any point during the show?
I was wholeheartedly head over heels in love with $250,000. That's the whodunit mance that I had. That was about it.
What about Cam and Chris? Is that a whodunit mance?
I don't know. That's time will tell. I don't know. That's up in the air. I know that I was focused pretty much. I would hang out and have a beer with Giles, and I would sleep with the $250,000 if those were my choices.
All right, fair enough. Let's see. I have some questions from our audience, but it was a surprise that you were coming on. So I don't know if I have any that are specifically for you to help us answer. Let me ask you this one question then. Ron Chan wants to know, based on the mediocre ratings, do you think we will get a season two next summer? Now, the whodunit ratings were up 10%, I think, from last week to match a season high. Do you feel like will there be more whodunit to come?
I don't know what is his definition of mediocre ratings. I mean, you know, folks are watching the show. People seem excited. I think there's a good possibility for there to be a season 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 9. Hopefully enough that there'll be a reunion show. I get to come back from the dead and get my money.
All stars.
All stars, exactly.
Who done it? Walking Dead edition.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that'd be fantastic. So where could people go and play bar trivia with you, Gino?
I'm at a couple bars around the city. There's anybody that knows Chicago. I'm Snuggery on Clark and Division on Tuesday nights. Wednesday nights, I'm over on Halsted at a bar called Morgan's. Thursdays, Tripoli Tap on Armitage.
So definitely not
that right now.
Yeah. Boom.
Well, I'm in uptown myself, Gina, so I might have to take a stop by sometime.
Oh, yeah, definitely do that. Come on out. I'll buy you a beer.
Sounds great.
Well, yeah, and Gino would only have a beer with Giles, so you're in good company, Kurt.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, well, Gino.
I'm very particular about who I have my beers with.
Fair enough.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking some whodunit with us, Gino. I know I was very sad to see you go. I thought you brought a lot of drama to the show this season, and we appreciated it.
Thanks. I had a lot of fun. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk, and looking forward to more podcasts.
Yeah. Well, good. Hopefully, what I'd like to do is I'd like to have like a whodunit reunion. If they're not going to do it on TV, I'd love to do it on Rob as a podcast and get a bunch of you guys to come on after the show ends and have a whodunit reunion.
I'm definitely down. I'm sure other folks will be as well.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Because, Gino, if you couldn't make it, we'd be crushed.
Oh, good one. Yes. Yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you.
Because of the chandelier. Yeah.
We'll be hanging from the chandelier. Yes. So thank you very much, Gino.
No problem, Rob. Kurt, good to talk to you guys. Take care.
All right. Take care. Easy. Bye, Gino.
Bye.
All right, Kurt, there you have it.
There we have it.
Yes. So there's Gino. That was great. We got so much insight into whodunit.
Yeah, definitely added added some flesh to the bones, if you will, of the of kind of what we thought we knew about the show, and definitely clarified a lot of things for us. It was good to have him on.
So we got so many questions from the listeners of Rob as a Podcast. I have like 50 questions here, and I felt
let's get started.
Well, let's just pick out the best one on a marathon Whodunit podcast. So we're officially well over the length of the Whodunit episodes. Not since we talked about the Whodunit book have we done a Whodunit podcast that was this long.
Well, you know, the book did warrant it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so I felt weird to ask Gino, be asking the questions with Gino, that I didn't want to put him in a position where he has to talk about who is, whether or not he knows who the final killer is or not. So let's see. This is from Brandon Bryce. He says that Cam and Gino rivalry reminded me of Russell Hance and Boston Rob in Survivor Heroes versus Villains. This is the second time Russell Hance comes up on this podcast, where they each picked separate teams and were going against each other. Cam is Russell Hance because he alienated people and just picked the few, while Gino gathered the majority to fight Cam. I also think Ronnie was like Coach, trying to play in the middle, and was a little man for screwing Gino over. Am I wrong using these comparisons? Well, Brandon Bryce has a couple of metaphors going on here. Let's take it one by one.
Yeah.
Do you see Cam and Gino as Russell and Boston Rob in Heroes versus Villains?
It's more, I guess, more so in Heroes versus Villains than on the Redemption Island season. But yeah, it's a little bit of a stretch for me, but it's close. There's something there.
Yeah. And then comparing Ronnie to Coach in Survivor Heroes versus Villains, I actually think that Ronnie did far more to screw over Gino than Coach did to screw over Boston Rob on Heroes versus Villains.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Coach wasn't passing notes to Russell Hance.
Right. It's definitely one of the, it's definitely the key rivalry.
JT was passing notes, not Coach.
Right, that's what I was thinking, and JT just ended up screwing himself over like Ronnie did. So I was thinking the same thing, that maybe Ronnie's the example of JT here.
All right, David Allen wants to know, who had a better mansion, Richie Rich or the killer? Sure, Richie Rich had a McDonald's, but also a lab in a backyard with sticky tar and lasers. Meanwhile, the killer has a morgue, but also a movie theater and holds events like limbo contests. Better mansion, Richie Rich or the killer?
And not just a morgue. It has a backup morgue. Let's not forget about that one. It's got the elevator. I don't know, but there do seem to be some points where maybe it's something we could have asked Gino. It does seem like there are big parts of the mansion that are completely unfurnished and empty as well. Like there's this wing that you don't go to, and except in case unless the puzzle leads you there. But it seems like there are points where they're racing around looking for clues where they end up in parts of the mansion that are just completely empty and devoid of furniture.
Yeah. Going back to the movie theater thing, it felt like to me like a total left turn that all of a sudden this was like the theme of the episode was Hollywood. I mean, we had like Gino comes downstairs. You have these two people that had like their blood drained out and they're sort of just like in like rigor mortis at the piano. And then all of a sudden it's all Hollywood. I mean, I feel like that was a stretch.
Yeah, there was no red carpet leading up to the piano.
Yeah.
I mean, they were dressed nicely, but then the movie theater in the basement made me felt more like for me personally, a conference room in a Holiday Inn Express than an actual movie theater. So I think it definitely was a bit of a stretch. But the silent movie was a nice way to serve up the clue. I thought that was an interesting.
That was good. Then Giles, he just took the ball and started running with it towards the end with the movie puns of like, and the award for the best killer goes to me.
Oh, yeah.
Here's looking at you, kid. really made a meal out of that.
And he was making more of those, and I'm going through my notes and I'm not finding, but there was another point where he made kind of a non sequitur, like one of those things like, is that really a saying? And like he did with the, you know, silent as a tranquilizer dart. He had another one of those moments here. And
was it when he said that and
everything was all quiet on the Western Front.
Like, yes! I was trying to tie that back to a movie. I mean, I know it was a book. It was probably a movie. And yes, that's exactly the line I was thinking of. I was like, what did that have to do with anything that you've been talking about up to this point? Yeah, all quiet on the restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah.
When he was going through the of how it happened. I did, though, like when he was, it's like, you'll all, in half an hour, you'll all get laid. Luau time. And he's like, I love this country. I love America.
I love
like
America.
He was channeling Yakov Smirnoff all of a sudden.
Yeah.
This country, I love it. In Russia, lays get you.
Yeah. So Giles was really into the luau.
Yeah.
So we'll see how many Hawaii references can we make. I guess
the killer blew his top like a volcano.
Yeah, I'm trying to come up with a poi pun, but I'm failing miserably right now. So I'm just going to move on.
Yeah. I did like when Lindsay said, maybe Giles did get laid.
Yeah. But by who?
Is the killer a woman? Is Giles sleeping with the killer?
Oh, I think Giles respects the whole upstairs downstairs division of labor in the house. So
I don't know. Think about it. The killer is a woman. That's why she's putting like the ankle bracelet on him. It's sort of like a kinky thing. He's
it just wants to keep track of him.
Yes.
Yes. Give it to me, Melina.
And I think my favorite of the names that Giles gets to say is Ronnie. I'll be very sad if Ronnie loses, so I don't get to hear Giles say Ronnie. He really he has a lot of gusto for Ronnie.
And one thing, this also they wanted to call out the whole. I thought it was kind of sneaky of Chris or. The whole encouraging the size 13 boot print and pointing that out that it's about, you know, Gino's size. And then even when we saw, you know, Gino putting his foot over the thing, Lindsay points out that's about the size of your feet. And then how Chris kept it from everybody that there were size 13 boots there, but they had paper stuffed in them. And that when Giles revealed that fact at dinner, she's like, I didn't even think to look inside the shoes. And I thought she played that off actually pretty convincingly.
Very well, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, you know, kudos to Chris. I mean, is Chris getting a fishy again this week?
I think so. I give Chris the fishy.
Okay.
Unless you want to give it to Melina as the killer.
No, given my track record, I'd probably try to give it to Gino again, even though he's dead. So
And I was corrected. Somebody in the comments pointed out that Stephen Fishbeck did award Courtney a fishy for voting herself out during the previous season.
Oh, Corinne?
I'm sorry, Freudian slip there. Yes, Corinne.
Yeah. I got some pushback in social media on my. Push for Sasha to get the fishy. So I'm like, you know what? It's just whoever wins the puzzle, they get the fishy. Or though, even though they didn't really spend a lot of time on it, but you know, Chris won the puzzle, but Cam got the most questions right. Apparently,
yes. Okay, so. I would not have a problem with a fishy for Cam this week either. He gets his chief rival out of the game. I do not have a problem with Cam getting the fishy either.
That's a good point.
You know what? Fishback will do this on occasion. Could we split the fishy, Cam and Chris?
You know what? Chris got it last week. I think she has to share it. So that this week it goes to this week. It's time for Cam to get it.
Yeah. Okay.
No sharing of the fishy.
No sharing. All right. Let's see. Kevin Donnelly, does the fact that Melina was spared 2 weeks in a row, despite her team not winning the clue, point to her as the killer? I think it doesn't hurt.
I personally don't think it does. Because again, we know that the killer doesn't get the inside information about the murders. And so, it's kind of everything that we know leads me to believe that it is possible for the killer to be in the bottom two. It's just like on the mole, they're not going to get eliminated. So, you know, anytime that the killer is in the bottom two, the other person is going to go home. So, just because Melina is not in the bottom two does not mean that she performed extraordinary. It means she did well on the quiz, but it doesn't mean that she did so because she was the killer. So she could just as easily have ended up in the bottom two and been the killer.
All right, back to Brandon Bryce. He says, Robin Kurt, how smart was Cam when he drafted his team? Chris is literally carrying the team on her back. Would you trust Cam with building any of your fantasy teams? I don't know, we're working on Rob as a Fantasy Football League 3, but if Cam might be a great resource before we do our drafting here, because Chris was like the Doug Martin of whodunit.
Has he drafted a great team, or has he picked like the best running back in existence, and then the rest of the team is just kind of, oh, okay, they're there.
Yeah, like Doug Martin.
Lindsay... not necessarily, you know, stepping it up in terms of investigations. You know, we saw that originally he had picked Geno and then reversed that decision. You know, Ulysses was not long for the world. So I think he picked the star. He picked the best possible single other person, but then I think some of the other people have been slightly duds that he's picked.
Well, good job, Cam. That was a great pick. The have we officially landed on very attractive, Chris?
I'm
in. Okay. Sarah Pearson wants to know, does the killer have something against Dana? Sasha was knocked out in her sleep while Dana was forced to participate. Yeah, I mean, it seemed like that Sasha was going to get killed, and it was like, all right, you know what, Dana, you just let's not delay the inevitable. You come with me.
Who's going to give him more attitude about pushing the cart?
Yeah,
Sasha, or Dana.
Sasha would be a handful, whereas, we know Dana did not like the physical exertion, but, why not?
That would have been a nice twist, is that if we saw that somehow the murder victim did fight back, and I would have loved to have seen that enacted out in the flashback, and then it turns out, like, everybody comes downstairs the next day with a different bruise on their face, but each explaining it away in a different manner, so... So even though the killer was kind of punched in the face by Sasha, let's say, that would have been fun to see. I personally just think I would have loved to have seen Sasha giving the killer some attitude in the flashback sequence.
Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
Rob Kautz wants to know, is it a foregone conclusion although it was a foregone conclusion by last week, he says, knowing that the shoes were stuffed, does this officially rule out all the males as a killer, or could this just be a red herring? We've never seen a red herring in the clues, though, that from what Giles is revealing to us.
Giles was very careful to point out, as he read the killer's explanation, that although the paper stuffed in the shoes could have made the shoes fit anybody. So, I mean, that's not the exact verbatim for what Giles said, but it was basically indicated that the size of the shoe did not in any way indicate who the killer was.
But if Geno did not get murdered, don't you feel like that would have definitely taken Geno off of our list of suspects, even though I have said for some time now, I do not believe Geno was the killer?
I don't necessarily think so. I think it was just meant to say... there is paper in the way that I read it was that Giles was explaining there's paper in the shoes now. It may or may not have been there when the killer wore the shoes. So I think that it was just basically meant to be a generic clue in the sense that there were boot prints and there were footprints and there were tire tracks. And the size of the boot print really shouldn't factor into figuring out who done it. So to help us explain it away. Let's stuff some paper in the shoes just to indicate that really any of the people in the game could have been technically wearing the shoes. So don't spend too much time focused on that.
Dan Weirdalak wants to know, do you think it was risky for the contestants to run around the house with open scalpel blades trying to solve the riddle? I was sure we were going to see a murder take place while the previous murders were being solved. Oh, that's very dangerous. You're not supposed to run with a scalpel, even if you're trying to solve a riddle.
Yeah, just given my track record of injuries, I very easily could have seen myself tripping and stabbing myself and basically self-eliminating from the game.
Yeah. Nick Fishman wants to know, forgive me if I am wrong, but was the scalpel really necessary to break down the paper-thin barrier? Couldn't you just throw caution to the wind and ram into that wall for the information?
It looked like it was a kind of like this, almost a a stretched like latex sheet over the wall. So, I mean, yeah, you know, Chris could have easily just like taken a thumbnail and cut the whole thing down. So I think it was just trying to kind of continue the whole theme of cutting open your character and then going to the morgue and then just continuing with the sharp implements. It was a very sharp episode.
Yes, well done. John Radich wants to know, is it possible that the killer has a trained monkey, or in an even greater twist, that the killer is an extremely intelligent monkey? Would like this. I feel like that Giles could do a lot with this.
Yeah, and I think we saw, I think, during the previews for the upcoming episode, what Ronnie saying something about, wait, there's a trained monkey? That was kind of like the non sequitur of the previews that really didn't relate to anything. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing how Trained Monkey does kind of play into things next week.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. How about this from Joe Combs? He wants to know, I have a question for Kurt Clark. Who do you think you are?
You know what? I really struggle with that question every day. but I do not think that I am the killer.
Okay. As Sean Fox wants power rankings on who's the killer. We did our whodunit power rankings this week. All right, so let's do who's the killer power rankings real quick. 1 to 5. I say Melina is number one. Do you want to argue that Lindsay should be number one atop the power rankings?
I'm gonna argue that number I believe that Lindsay is the killer. My main argument being that she's not necessarily putting as much, does not appear to be putting as much energy and effort into the investigations as some of the other people, mm-hmm. and seems to let things wash over her a lot more than, say, Melina does.
Hmm. All right. So I guess since we're over an hour and 10 minutes into this, we'll just be at an impasse. We'll have a tie at number one in the power rankings. Who's at number three? Chris?
I'm going to say Chris. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then at 4 and 5, who's least likely to be the killer? Is it Cam?
Yes.
Yes. No way Cam is the killer. And Ronnie is number four.
Number four.
Okay. Let's see. Jacob Jones wants to know, I almost forgot. Were Sasha and Dana's rooms always next to each other, or were they moved to these rooms just for this murder?
I was wondering, actually, you know what? That question came to my mind during the course of this podcast. I was wondering, I was wondering that very same thing. And it seemed, we didn't really necessarily get like an overhead view of, I'm still not necessarily sure how close the rooms actually were, but I don't know, maybe, you know, that's a good question. It could have just, for the sake of the investigation / show, because we as viewers have never really been privy to the layout of all of the different bedrooms necessarily. It could have been potentially just moved for the purpose of this show, or for this particular episode. But otherwise, that was just a very lucky coincidence.
April Weaver wants to know, is CAM an acronym for Killer Among Me? Do you have a better one? Not unless the killer is Gary Busey.
Gary Busey, yeah.
K-A-M, Killer Among Me. How about this for Gary Busey? Melina, murder everyone living in North America.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, Melina.
So what Lindsay would be, living is not death, says a youth.
Yeah,
it broke down about halfway through.
That would be a great twist if Gary Busey was the killer.
Celebrity whodunit.
Celebrity. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Bring it back, ABC. Celebrity whodunit coming this fall.
Gary Busey getting crushed by a chandelier, or we could obviously come up with more creative deaths than that, but that would be kind of fun.
As it turns out, the killer was no one other than Gary Busey. It was me. So let's see. Lots of great questions. Let's see. Michael Watt wants to know, any chance Dana faked her own death and is actually the killer?
I think that's unlikely.
Unlikely. You would think so, considering that she's in the morgue.
At this point, we know the convention of the show is people getting bumped off one by one, or in some cases, two by one, and one of the last people standing is the killer. The killer did not die during the course of the... did not fake die during the course of this show.
Okay. Let's see. How about last question from Jimmy Yuda wants to know, why doesn't anybody ever suspect Ronnie?
He's in my top three, actually.
He's actually in your top four, Kirk.
Well, you know, I never said where I thought. Okay, if I have to stand by the official Rob Has a Podcast list.
Power rankings.
But I think this time, he tried to get a little too cute and fancy with icing Gino out, and I think that kind of points away from him being the killer. He's won a couple of the killer's riddles, he's not consistent at how he kind of treats information. But I think that he went to a lot of trouble to sketch out the morgue scene for Melina and get her the note. I think almost more trouble than necessarily the killer would have felt obligated to do. And it was all done to the point of trying to get information to Melina in order to get Gino out. And I don't think that's something that the killer would be looking to do.
Yes. And we don't think that Ronnie is the killer. We don't think the killer is a man. And we'll eat our words on this podcast if it turns out that the killer is a man. But we do believe the whodunit killer will be a woman. So, Kurt, how many episodes of Whodunit are left?
There are three episodes left.
Oh my God!
This coming Sunday, we have five investigators and someone gets bumped off. The next Sunday, four investigators and someone gets bumped off. And the last episode, we have our final three investigators.
The final three. Do you want to make a pick? Who's the final three?
I'm going to say that the final three is going to be. I think it's going to be Chris, Cam, and Lindsay, actually.
And I'm going to say it's Chris, Cam, and Melina.
There you go.
There you go. So we'll see. This is a real showdown. We're like Cam and Gino here over Melina and Lindsay.
I'll say that I'm like Cam and you're like Gino.
All right. Well, whodunit fans that you've made it all the way to the end of this podcast, bravo! Good job. You deserve a limbo for getting all the way to the end of this. And tell Kurt and I on Twitter whether are you Team Rob or Team Kurt when it comes down to who you think the murderer is, or if you think it's somebody else. Let us know. We love hearing from you guys on Twitter, and Kurt is especially great at responding to everybody who has their own theories on the whodunit. And it's Kurt, thank you for turning us on to the whodunit, because it's been a very fun show.
It's been a fun summer alternative. I've been definitely enjoying all the Big Brother that's going on this summer, but it's also nice to have this little kind of side treat.
Palate cleanser.
Exactly.
Yes. Very good. All right. So we will be back on, I guess, on Thursday for the live eviction recap show with Ian Terry this Thursday night when we talk, and the fifth person who gets evicted from the Big Brother house. And then on Friday, I will speak to that fifth person to be evicted from the Big Brother house. And then next weekend, we will be back for more whodunit. And Kurt, are we back on our Sunday schedule?
I will be back in town next Sunday afternoon, so should be ready to go for whodunit on Sunday evening.
Yes. Can you discuss your travel plans?
Sure. I leave on Wednesday for the Hearts of Reality charity event going on just outside Orlando, Florida, in Celebration, Florida. Goes kind of, I think, some of the events are going from Thursday through Sunday, and we've got a ton of people from Survivor and Big Brother and The Amazing Race showing up. It's kind of it's like a Make-A-Wish charity that's going on down there. So they kind of, you know, meet with the kids, and then there's autograph signing and obviously get-togethers at bars. This would not be reality TV if there was not alcohol involved. And it's a good time. It's kind of lots of chilling out, lots of meeting folks. And so if any of the listeners are already planning on going, definitely send me a tweet and I'll keep my eyes peeled.
And Kurt, we need you to round up some more guests for Rob as a podcast.
I'll do my best. Many of them, the Otises, the Kim Spradlins, the Denise Stapleys, many of the people who have been on the show, the Richard Hatches are going to be there.
Yes.
But there's definitely going to be some new folks that maybe aren't that familiar with the Rob Has a Podcast empire, and still watch the show and have a lot to say. So we'll do what I can to get some people together.
All right, fantastic. So if you're going to be down there, say hi to Kurt Clark. Will anybody from Whodunit be there? Will Giles be there?
I haven't seen anybody on the list for any shows that are currently active, so that counts for both Big Brother and Whodunit. And
he does love any sort of tropical party.
That is true, and there is
a
luau
country.
Night. There is a luau night at a local bar on Saturday, a luau-themed evening, so maybe we will see Giles there.
Yeah, and Kurt, just be careful. Watch out for that chandelier at the luau.
I will do so.
All right. Thanks, everybody who's been listening. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode of Rob Has a Podcast, you could subscribe to our iTunes feed. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, and we always appreciate it when you leave us feedback on our iTunes page, give us 5-star ratings, and write some nice comments. Always appreciated. So, Kurt, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks to Gino. Thanks to Laura Holtzwasser for getting Gino on the line with us today. And talk to you guys on Thursday night after Big Brother. Take care, everybody. Bye.